Hello and welcome to Digital Careers Meets, part of Barton Rock's Digital Careers podcast. And this week we're going to be discussing countering Amazon's advance in the grocery retail sector. And I was joined by grocery retail expert Jordan Burke, who is based in the US and has previously spent almost 14 years working at Walmart, including a period of time in e-commerce in China. Jordan has more recently established his own advisory business called Tomorrow Retail Consulting and works across clients in Asia, the US, and also parts of Europe. So I hope you enjoy listening. So I'm delighted to welcome Jordan Burke to Digital Careers. And Jordan is a grocery retail expert, so eminently qualified to comment on today's discussion point. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Guy, good to see you. Thanks for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. Thanks for being involved. So we're going to be talking today about countering Amazon's advance in the grocery retail sector. And I often reflect upon Amazon because we're all consumers. And so we're fascinated by this business and the growth in it. But we're going to dig a little deeper into the intricacies of how the wider grocery retail space can respond to some of the advances that the company is making. But let's kick off with you, first of all, because you've had a very distinguished career in the grocery retail space yourself. So do you want to just talk a little bit about your background and then also Tomorrow Retail, so the audience understand a little bit about your proposition and your niche in the market?
So I actually began my career in the digital media industry. It was part of a startup. A group of college mates and I founded a business back in the mid-90s. And in the digital media world, it was a really exciting time because we actually sold the business to WPP and then got to integrate a digital media business into a traditional media business. And so after going back to business school, I wanted to try to do that again at a larger scale. And so joined Walmart with the vision of helping Walmart become a much more integrated digital and physical retailer. And the best place to do that, I thought, was in China. So in 2008, I was able to go over to China and help launch Walmart's first e-commerce business. Mm-hmm. And over the subsequent almost 12 years, we built really one of Walmart's most advanced omni-channel approaches in the China market, both for Sam's Club and for Walmart. My role was to set that up, manage it, build an extraordinary team, and scale it to the point where now all of Walmart's stores in the China market are operating at a very high volume of online demand while still serving as offline retail facilities. And so really exciting space. About a year and a half ago, I had a thesis that North America was the next China.
Okay.
I saw the North American retail market as needing to accelerate its digitization and thought that there was quite a bit that we could draw on the journey that occurred in China. And so I founded Tomorrow to help retailers accelerate their digital channel sales and profitability. And so now we as a firm work in North America, but not exclusively. We also work in Asia and in parts of the EU to help retailers to really embrace what we call 50-50 mindset of thinking about being as good as you are for an online order as you are when she wants to walk in store. And so we work on that pretty heavily.
Well, I might come back to that 50-50 thing because it'd be an interesting question to ask you about in terms of the sales split between online and bricks and mortar in the future. And you can make your bold prediction. Can I come back to that point about the US being the next China? Because if you were to pick the man or woman off the street and say, which of these two markets, I suppose it depends which market you pick them off from, which market is the most advanced in terms of grocery retail? A lot of people might say the US over China, but you just want to give some context as to how sophisticated places like China and South Korea have become from a digital grocery retail shopping point of view.
When I arrived in China in 2008, it was considered an emerging market, which meant that the retail industry was quite immature across nearly all aspects, from buying to inventory flow to store layout. What's happened in the subsequent 12 years is not only have retailers in China and in many other parts of Asia caught up on those basic fundamentals of retail, they've embraced the use of digital in a much deeper and more advanced way than their peers here in the US or Western markets. For instance, retailers in China are very comfortable with the idea of 50% of their sales coming via online channels, back to this 50-50 mindset concept. They've embraced that and they've adapted their organizations, their physical retail fleets, their data strategies in order to support this 50-50 world. They've also digitized the shopping experience in the actual store. So they've embraced the use of mobile for everything from checkout to pricing and promotions to mapping the store experience. So they really have looked at every place where digital can make the customer experience or retail business a better approach, and they've embraced it quite deeply. And so it's a situation where on the fundamentals, they're at parity, and on the future factors, they're winning.
Mm. We're going to come on to Amazon. I mean, I almost feel like we could sort of go down this channel of talking about Asia digital retail for a whole podcast in itself, but we will come back to the Amazon thing in just a second. Just to try and understand the context of those advances in Asia, though, why is that happening at a faster rate than in Western countries like the US and Europe, for example?
So I think there are three factors that are most critical if you take a look at markets like China, but not just China. The first is the customer's willingness to try new things. Most customers in Asia have seen retail evolve through 5 or 6 versions of a retail shopping experience in their lifetime. And so they're very comfortable with walking away from legacy behavior if there's something better that comes along. So a lack of habit, if you will, in being married to it. Second is the fact that in these markets, there are very powerful digital players that have not only focused on the internet economy, but they've really focused on penetrating the physical economy. Alibaba, Tencent, have really invested in making the physical economy smarter and more digital. And so they have partnered with retailers to bring this innovation into their business in a way that has not yet happened in Western markets. And then third is the flywheel that has kicked in around e-commerce, where as more customers adopt e-commerce, costs come down, things like delivery costs, the biggest barriers. And you see this continuous improvement cycle where more customers order, costs come down, which make more customers more motivated to order. And you see this very high density e-commerce environment that makes, you know, a delivery in 30 minutes cost 85 cents in the China market, where that still costs about 10 bucks in the US. But that will come down also. That is not an Asia only phenomenon.
Okay, interesting. So all of this has synergy and dovetails with some of the ambitions, I'm sure, that Amazon has to claim a slice of the grocery retail pie. And the highest profile initiative they've probably made is buying Whole Foods, right? Which seems like a good few years ago. But you can talk with some context about why Amazon has this ambition to get into the grocery retail space. And the answer may be very simple, which is it's a big market and it thinks it can take a big slice of it. But why is it interested in that space? And why has it taken this long to get into it, do you think?
Globally, if you look at the maturity curve of e-commerce, in nearly every market, e-commerce begins with what we call general merchandise. Mm-hmm. That's apparel, electronics, home goods. These are categories that are really well suited to e-commerce, obviously books and media, where they're relatively high margins, they're easy to ship, and where a long tail assortment really makes a big difference to the customer.
Yeah.
What we see though is as the leading e-commerce players in those categories scale and they reach profitability in those businesses, they shift focus to grocery. Food is the largest retail category, but the most difficult to make work from an e-commerce perspective. And so around the world, you're seeing this evolving approach to grocery among leading digital platforms. Amazon's journey is very similar to what you'd see at JD, Ali, and others around the world. Hmm. They began with the concept of serving grocery just like they did apparel or electronics, shipping big bags of flour from distribution centers 100 miles away from the customer. They realized quickly that doesn't work and it likely will never work. So Amazon created something called Amazon Fresh, where they built these small dedicated fulfillment centers inside cities across the US, the UK, France. But they found that in that case, they weren't able to deliver the kind of volume needed to make those facilities work. And a large reason for that was because customers couldn't walk in to those stores and really validate that this was a trustworthy grocery proposition. One of the uniquenesses of grocery, Guy, is that customers still to this day want to be able to walk in, shop offline from time to time, and feel comfortable that they can trust this purveyor before shopping online. Amazon realized.
Is Amazon hedging its bets then by going down the dual channel of bricks and mortar and relying on its established e-commerce channel as well then? Is that the rationale for the acquisition of Whole Foods?
No, it's not a hedge as much as it is a natural evolution to where they are today. Whole Foods taught them that having a physical store in a community is the best approach to offering an omni grocery experience. But it also taught them that the Whole Foods stores are not a great solution to that. And so what you will see Amazon do is roll out its own new format called Amazon Fresh, which is designed from day one to be an omni grocery proposition. And the Whole Foods acquisition was a very valuable lesson in helping them get to that ultimate omni grocery proposition. And so I don't think they would change anything about that journey. I think it's positioned them very well. And so now you'll see this new store format be where they really place a lot of their bets going forward.
Let's look at the rest of the pack. In fact, it's probably fair to say the rest of the pack is still in front of Amazon in the context of grocery retail. But how seriously worried do you think they should be? So how swift an inroad do you think Amazon can make into that space? And what are the things that it does do really well that grocery retailers should be looking over their shoulders about?
So there are two things Amazon is going to do that are going to be disruptively convenient for consumers. And there's one thing about their business model that is also disruptive to incumbent retailers. Customers that are getting groceries from Amazon going forward are going to be getting 1 hour delivery and 15-minute pickup in store. This compares to the average grocer in certainly the UK and even the US that's offering a 4 to 8 hour delivery experience and usually a 4 to 8 hour pickup experience. Some will say, well, is that really necessary? Is that really a big difference? And without going too far into it, yes. Trust me, a 1 hour grocery experience is dramatically better for the consumer than even an 8 hour or 4 hour experience. Yeah. So they will disrupt on the convenience side. On the business model side, Amazon has diversified itself to be strong enough, what I would say from a B2B perspective, to earn on Amazon Web Services and on its media business in order to fund a grocery proposition that is disruptively convenient.
Okay, interesting. That point about the immediacy and the desire on the part of consumers to want things more quickly than we'd imagine that they would want them. Well, if you'd asked someone 5 years ago, would you want something the next day via an Amazon Prime service, you know, a non-food product, people would probably said, it's not really necessary. But people are very happy to sign up for their $10 a month for Amazon Prime to get that quality of service. So what you're saying is some of the things that we've seen in non-food sense, we're going to start seeing translate into the grocery world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've got the reference points from China, where I saw one of your video podcasts with an e-commerce business in China. And you asked that very question, didn't you? Is it really necessary for you to have food inside an hour? And the answer was an affirmative yes.
Yeah, there has really never been an instance where giving a customer something faster doesn't shift behavior. And in grocery, it will absolutely be the case. Now, what's interesting is retailers operate with what I call a P&L bias, which means that they assume that delivering in 1 hour is going to be much more expensive. They assume customers won't pay for it, and therefore they've convinced themselves that it's not necessary. And so most will argue you out of going to 1 hour or going to immediate because they're afraid that their P&L won't be able to support it, which is perfect for Amazon. They will exploit that P&L bias to the point where some retailers won't survive it and others will be scrambling to catch up, like in the Prime situation, because you know folks wrote off that that 1 hour experience is not going to be necessary.
And it seems that, you know, this is fairly well documented in the media that Amazon runs its e-commerce business at very, very tight margins because it's got much higher margins from elsewhere, like Amazon Web Services. And I've always thought about them playing the long game. And I guess they're playing the long game in the grocery retail sense as well. And they're going to squeeze competitors on margins. So let's just sort of ask the question, and how are the established grocery retailers going to respond to all this? If you're sitting in the boardroom of large grocery retail organizations globally, not specifically US or Asia, but anywhere else here in the UK, for example, what are the conversations taking place, and what advice would you be offering in terms of a strategic direction to combat Amazon's threat?
There are three changes that that boardroom needs to embrace. First, they need to commit that they will be a 50-50 operator. They will convert their stores into high velocity fulfillment, and they will offer immediate fulfillment. They will be the fastest operator in their trade area. Second, they are going to digitize their customer relationship in store. So when she does shop offline, she's getting the same tools, same personalization, same convenience that she gets when she's shopping the app from home. And then finally, they are going to use the data that they collect through having a great online business and a digital in-store business to create a truly personalized experience across all channels and use data long-term as a way to be differentiated from their peers as their peers come into the grocery business.
Yeah. Well, that sounds very much like digital transformation to me. And that's a nice segue into another question I've got, which ties into what I do, of course, which is executive search within the digital space. But how different then do you think org structures are going to look in the future? So what are the, let's come back to you. You're sitting in that boardroom and you're the chief HR officer globally for those organizations. What people investments do you think the established grocery retailer is going to have to make to bring this to a reality? Because I keep coming back to this thing with a lot of conversations I have with people about digital transformation is that a lot of them don't work. A lot of them fail. And there's a crazily high statistic, like 2/3 of digital initiatives in bigger companies just don't get off the ground because they don't gain the traction, that flywheel that you talked about earlier on. They don't gain the momentum and the support, and they fizzle out. What do you think the investments are going to be to make all of this a success?
Well, Guy, maybe that stat is the right one because failure is a critical aspect to embrace. Yeah. About being a digital organization. And we'll come back to that in a second as it relates to agility. The org investments and structure are going to depend on where the business is on the maturity curve of being a true omni retailer. If this is a retailer that's just getting started and looking at how do we start to gain some momentum, you're looking at probably a small startup team that's reporting into your most open-minded, risk-tolerant executive in that organization and is getting budget and support to start running and learning, right? That situation is very different from a retailer who has 5 to 7% of their business already coming online in the grocery space or 25 to 30 in the non-grocery space. And they're looking at how do they really scale it from there? In that instance, you're now merging your digital business in with your core because it is your core. And so you're looking at executive talent that is first very aware and exposed to how to operate digitally. So you've got to either acquire or expose your existing talent to scaled, mature, sophisticated digital operations. And so they understand what that looks like. Second, you've got to encourage agility. You've got to make that leadership feel safe and encouraged and empowered to take risk, make mistakes, enable your team to make decisions where you know execution won't be perfect, but it will be progress. And you need to encourage that. So in those failure instances, you're actually congratulating and empowering that person to take those learnings and keep moving. And so I think there's exposure, awareness, and then agility are really critical ingredients to making sure that your team is ready to scale that from being, okay, good progress, to really being a true omni business.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying there is that there isn't a blueprint for success on digital, because a lot of it's new to organizations, and actually failing in the right way is the best way of learning, in a slightly ironic sense, I think, is what you're saying. Is that right?
If your team is not making mistakes or failing at least 40% of the time, you're not taking enough risks. You're not trying enough stuff. Now, as an executive guy, you'll recognize you've got to be mature about when you cancel, you know, when you close down initiative, because there is going to be plenty of pruning that needs to constantly occur in your business. And that's okay. Mm. You know, just be comfortable, embrace that, have farewell parties to businesses that are going to be sunset so that you can take that talent and energize them about the next opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I've talked to a lot of people who have come from digitally native businesses, and the culture in those types of organizations are one where failure is much more widely embraced than it would be in a digitally maturing business. I think failure is quite a powerful word and a hard one for people psychologically to deal with, but I absolutely hear where you're coming from. What about this whole profitability piece? Because Amazon is willing to work at very tight margins. Certainly grocery retail in the UK doesn't make a lot of money from home deliveries, for example, so online shopping. How are they going to resolve that conundrum? Because you've got Amazon biting at their heels. They've got a business model which is shifting heavily towards online. I think we're probably at about 20%. If we're not at 20%, we're not far off in the UK now. And it's gone from probably 10 or 12% to close to 20 inside 9 months because of COVID, of course. They've got a bit of a headwind, and they've got also someone biting at their heels. So how are they going to make this model profitable?
Guy, they've got to do three things, okay? First, they've got to recognize that the P&L of the future has got to look a lot different than the P&L of the past, okay? Retail CEOs have grown up making their living on gross margin. Hmm. That has to be diversified, and they need to be comfortable earning incomes on other businesses or other aspects of their business in order to compete. Amazon makes no profit on gross margin. Alibaba makes no profit on gross margin. So you have to be able to diversify, A. B, you've got to be great at continuously improving the efficiency of your new digital businesses. So as they mature and become meaningful, you're getting as much as you can out of them. You have to understand that that is a continuous process. But third, you also need the long game. You need to understand that in order to reach scale, your digital businesses are going to need multiple years of losses in most instances in order to fund the learning, the customer growth, the kind of buying scale. Factors that are going to make this profitable are often going to rely on enough business, enough scale to make that work. So get comfortable with a new P&L shape. Certainly focus on efficiency and engineering as you grow, but realize it's going to take time, and set aside that money. Be aware that it's going to take you multiple years of losses, and commit to it. Otherwise, don't do it, right? Don't be surprised when you're on your third year of losses in a growing digital channel. Embrace it, but look at other ways to diversify.
Yeah. I think I've given you three or four jobs through this conversation, and I'm going to give you another one in a minute. So we've talked about what you do if you're a CHRO and a chief exec and sitting in the boardroom. What about if you're the CFOs? You've just talked about cutting costs in retail. Where are those cost cuts going to come from? Where do you see the P&L shape looking different, you know, the different lines of a P&L? Which ones are going to be thinner than they are now?
So there are a number of core operating lines that are facing pressure and are going to see innovation. There's also the gross margin line that I think is going to be a real opportunity for most retailers. So within the operation, you're going to see the mature, stable aspects of the operation begin to automate. And so whether it's that front-end checkout experience in a retailer, whether it's cleaning in store, it's monitoring in stock, and ultimately even restocking, these are steps that are going to shift to automation in order to shave labor points or shave cost out of the P&L in that instance. Meanwhile, on the gross margin side, you're going to see retailers working very hard to be able to improve their mix. So private brand is something the UK has actually been a world leader in, but globally is getting much more energy around, as well as looking at how suppliers can be able to be more efficient in order to bring down that cost of goods. And part of that's going to be enabling technology that allows suppliers to manage their business at the retailer in a way that's more efficient so they can pass through those savings to you in the form of cost of goods.
Yeah, interesting. And I guess from all of that stuff, investment in jobs, new jobs, it's that tech function. Data obviously is another big thing. If you look at, you know, how org structures looked 5-10 years ago in a data sense, I mean, the size of those data science and data analytics functions would have been very different, of course, to what they are now. Now, of course, some retailers will be outsourcing some of the expertise and the larger ones will be building capability in-house. But I guess that's what you're seeing with a lot of your retail clients, is that investment in data, right? That's the fuel of the future.
It's a key area of growth, absolutely. Retailers used to have what are called BI teams, business intelligence teams, but they didn't really have data operations and engineering. That's changing dramatically. And they're seeing data operations as a key function to be able to grow centrally and then enabling in each function. So take operate the actual store operations we just described. All of those initiatives that we talked about are going to rely on data operations to be able to guide that automation and even guide the teams that are managing the automation. So data operations is definitely a key capability that's growing dramatically.
Yeah. Again, Amazon seems to get the headlines a lot because they do some funky new stuff with AI, for example, you know, stores that don't have checkouts and are just, you know, doing it on data recognition, basically visual data recognition. That seems to be something that they're willing to spend an awful lot of money on to innovate. Are you seeing that innovation coming from any other areas of the retail sectors, the grocery retail sectors in particular?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Amazon Go is a relatively unique Amazon investment in the amount of money they've put into that and the length of time they've stayed committed to it. It's very interesting. I'm not convinced that computer vision checkout is really the mainstream solution going forward, but that'll be a really fun space to watch. So the online grocery side is where there's a lot of additional innovation and investment, and that is around how do you bring automation into that area of your business into the store. So robotics picking orders is an area that has gotten a ton of energy, capital, and competition. And so that's really an interesting space to watch. Our experience with regards to that is the retailer has to be very thoughtful about their what we call maturity curve, and at what point your business is stable, predictable enough to be able to introduce that type of automation. You typically have a long way to go to get to that moment in time where you can add value incrementally or through other innovation. But that's an area that's going to be a big focus. And then just generally robotics in store. Yeah. So the use of different robotic tools to be able to help stores be more efficient is also an area that's got a ton of energy.
Yeah. What are you personally most excited about, though, from a technology point of view? I mean, you've talked about a whole range of things that are going on from front end and further back in the supply chain as well. But what do you personally think is the most exciting thing that's taking place at the moment? And perhaps, you know, I'll come back to another question in a second for you to sort of make a bold prediction about the future. But what do you get excited about now?
Absolutely most exciting part of what's happening at this moment is retailers embracing agility. And this may not be the type of answer you had hoped for, but seeing retailers, a group that have always been much more executional focused about precision and getting things done at scale, now adopting experimentation, you know, taking things to market early when they're still messy, being able to make mistakes and learn from them. I'm seeing that happen in our industry in a way that never happened before. And to me, that unlocks all the chances to try these new innovations we've just talked about and really changes this from being a fairly traditional, predictable industry to being almost a high-tech industry.
Yeah.
And so what happens then is new talent is attracted into the industry because they see a canvas that's much more broad and open for them to innovate. And you just get a great kind of step change in the customer experience as a result of this too. So to me, it's the agility that has now been embraced in retail.
No, it's a good way of looking at it, because you only have to look at some of the revenue figures of the big US players. They're almost eye-watering, the size and what might be perceived as quite cumbersome organizations. And you talk about this step change in large, potentially inflexible, precision-driven businesses to becoming more agile. What's been the turning point? Has it been the dawn of increased online sales and the absolute necessity to adapt or perish? Or has it been a different phenomenon that's come into the equation? What have you looked back on? What's been the turning point, Jordan?
Let's talk two examples. So in China, this mindset shift occurred because of the impending doom that Alibaba and Tencent taking over the marketplace created within retailers. So a bifurcation and two camps standing for a war created a sense of urgency to change that hadn't been there previously. In much of the rest of the world, COVID has shown retailers that digital engagement can in some instances be the only way that you can serve a customer. Yeah. And so that has acted similarly to give retailers a deep sense of trepidation that if I don't change, I may no longer exist. And that is a reality. It is true. It would have taken longer without this instance, but it is there. And it is something that I think is no longer a deniable factor in retail. They are all in, and it's really exciting.
That's a fairly confronting red light flashing, isn't it? When you think you adapt, or it could be the end of the road. And I think it's really exciting, actually. I mean, whilst there is this threat of Amazon coming along and doing what it's done to a lot of other segments of retail, what I'm hearing today is that you're saying there's appetite to change, and there's very real change which is taking place in the grocery retail sector, which makes it actually a very exciting place to be as a digital executive.
Absolutely. I would think that among the top 100 grocers worldwide, a year ago, maybe 20 of their chairmen or executives leading the businesses thought digital was essential to their future. Today, I think that number is probably closer to 70, which means the teams working in those businesses are now in a pro-digital environment, which you know makes all the difference and gives them the safety and the support and resource they need to really start running. And so that's exciting when you see even folks that had been naysayers or hopeful this wouldn't happen now embracing it and leaning in. You've got a much more conducive environment for the folks that really get it done, as you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, it'd be an interesting podcast guest to get one of those chairmen who doesn't think that digital is part of the future, because I think it would be a very difficult argument to counter that digital isn't going to make the strides that you're suggesting. I think a really good question to finish on as well is the very early stages of this conversation, you talked about the 50-50. Now that's a big number that you're picking out there. And, you know, I'm sure it's a very informed number based on your background and what you're hearing and talking to retailers about. But how long is that going to take to get to the equilibrium that you're suggesting?
It all depends on the leadership of the business. 50-50 is a reality, but it's also a growth mindset. And from a growth perspective, in China, when I embraced the 50-50 mindset, our e-commerce business was at 7% of sales. But I could see the customer behavior, I could see the marketplace change, and I could see that the faster we got to that level, the more likely we had to win, or the more likely we would have an advantage in this space. And so thinking from a 50-50 mindset says, how can I get there? And what will the world look like when I'm there? And so depending on the industry, it's happening in some instances. Levi's was at 50% last quarter. The Gap in the last quarter was over 60%. Best Buy was at 41%. So there are enormous global retailers that are already at that level. So it's actually not that ambitious anymore. But certainly in the grocery space, there are very few that are above the 25% rate at this point. So it is still a growth mindset. And it's one that I think the more you embrace it, the more you get excited about what that could create for your business. If you are leading to 50, rather than being dragged there, how can you really innovate and be a leader in this space?
Yeah. As we've sort of made this a theme of the conversation, Amazon, I mean, it's been a sort of a way to frame what is a very interesting conversation about increasing of e-commerce or online sales. But when you've got a player like Amazon that's entering the fray, it's a pretty strong signal that you've got to do something and do something quickly, right? Otherwise, you're going to fall behind. But look, today's been really interesting. I mean, I could talk on and on about this, because I think the great thing about grocery retail is that all of us, you know, whether we're doing recruitment or grocery retail consulting, it's a very interesting and topical subject, because we're all part of the story. I think today has been fascinating, and I'm sure we'll get a wide interest in people tuning in to listen to your expertise. So really appreciate it, and best of luck. And I look forward to watching your progress with interest, Jordan.
Guy, likewise, it's been great to see yours. Thanks for having me.
So I hope you enjoyed that discussion. Good to have such a qualified individual in the grocery retail space such as Jordan, who presented the challenge of Amazon as a threat, but also an exciting digital opportunity for agile grocery retail companies. And please remember to subscribe to this podcast, or if you like what you hear, please leave a review. And you can watch the full-length version of Digital Careers on the knowledge section of my website, bartonrock.com.